Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is our spring membership drive. We'll get back to that in just a minute. But first, if you haven't started already, inspired by the warm weather this spring, planting season is just around the corner. And by now you're taking stock of your perennials, what works, what doesn't, what survived. And as you do that, try to figure out if your perennials are native or not. If they aren't, and if you're interested in the attributes of a native garden, our next guest can help. Charlotte Edelman, a retired lawyer turned native plant expert, is co-author of The Midwestern Native Garden, an illustrated guide. It's a beautiful reference book now in its second printing at Ohio University Press. She and Bernard Schwartz already have written and self-published the award-winning Prairie Directory of North America, the United States, and Canada when she started gathering material for the guide. Charlotte Edelman and Bernard Schwartz will be in Columbus in September. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have information for you there about that. She's with us now from Wilmette, Illinois, near Chicago. Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Question for our listeners. Give us the name of a plant in your garden. Maybe Charlotte can tell if it's native or not, and if it is, what you can replace it with for the same impact. I'm sorry, if it's not native, what you can replace it with for the same impact with a native plant. That is how her book, The Midwestern Native Garden, is written. It's an illustrated guide of native alternatives to non-native flowers and plants. And the way to use it is to look up what you already have in your garden if it's non-native, and it recommends alternatives. Give us a call, 614-292-8501. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go online and to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. And you can tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU. Once again, my guest is Charlotte Edelman. She's a native plant expert and co-author of The Midwestern Native Garden, an illustrated guide. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our spring membership drive. Please show your support for All Sides and for 89.7 NPR News. Call 1-866-897-9678. Our goal this hour is $1,500, and we can meet this goal with your help. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org. And with a pledge of support at the $120 level, our thank you gift to you will be the book, The Midwestern Native Garden. Call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. The Midwestern Native Garden provides native alternatives to non-native flowers and plants. The book is a chapter dedicated to each season, spring, summer, fall, winter, and a helpful glossary and index. At the $120 pledge level, you will learn how to reintroduce native plants to your garden and promote a healthy ecosystem. Call 1-866-897-9678 and make that pledge right now, and then you can hunker down and listen to the rest of the show in peace. Charlotte, let's talk about first about what the benefits of native plants are versus non-native plants. What's the problem with the hostas?
Hostas. Well, hostas take up a lot of space. One of the things that I hope will be helpful with our book is that it points out that some of the plants that we just assume are native plants are actually not native plants, like hostas. A lot of people just assume that hostas, which are virtually everywhere, were always here and are native to the Midwest. So first of all, these hostas, which, as you know, take up acres of people's front lawns and driveways and edges and whatever, they're taking up very limited space, which could be better utilized by a native plant. And why should there be a native plant? Well, for one reason, native plants are going extinct. And most of us would like to see our native plants remain alive and well for future generations. So when we see the destruction that highways are built and shopping centers are built, we know that that means that all the native plants that once were there are being plowed under and built over. That's a worrisome situation. So what do we do about it? Well, one of the things that we would do about it is plant these native plants in our gardens and landscapes. But unfortunately, instead of doing that, people go and plant the old things that we're all so used to, like hostas, which are introduced from China. So that's one benefit of choosing native plants, is to keep the native plants alive and so they don't go extinct, because an awful lot of our native plants are actually endangered and actually are extinct. Shall I give another reason?
Yeah, I like the idea of conserving water and soil, because now that you have a completely native garden, you don't have to water it, I read.
Well, that's absolutely true. Once you get your native plants in, especially prairie plants, which are very deep-rooted plants, as opposed to like lawn, let's say, which the roots go down about 2 inches, and the lawn, for example, totally requires human beings for its very survival. If we're not around to water our lawns, they soon disappear, as I'm sure many people have noticed. So as opposed to that, native plants, their roots go down sometimes 20 feet into the ground. And that was, you know, a way of dealing with the semi-arid climate that we have in the Middle West, these deep moisture-seeking roots. And I know from my own personal experience that the gardens that I've planted with my native plants, once they're established, of course, you have to get them established like any plant. You have to water them. But once they're established, they don't need watering anymore. I haven't watered my plants in 20 years. So, I mean, it's a very obviously ecological and environmentally sound thing to do, to plant native plants and preserve our water, which is becoming increasingly a precious resource.
Do you include plants in here that would be good for rain gardens?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the thing about native plants is, here we live in North America. This is a huge continent, and there were all these plants here when it was discovered, you know, in a few hundred years ago, and they were acclimated to every single kind of ecosystem that exists. It isn't as if they were all just waiting for Europeans to import plants, or for, you know, other areas of the world to import plants. So, yes, there are beautiful native plants that are perfectly adapted to wetlands and which are appropriate for rain gardens.
Thanks to Mary in Columbus, we have $1,400 to go this hour in our pledge membership drive. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you want to talk to our guest, Charlotte Edelman, she's a native plant expert and co-author of The Midwestern Native Garden, an illustrated guide. That's our gift to you at the $120 level to this today. 1-866-897-9678 is the number to call. If you want to make the pledge right now, please do. You can also go online to our secure server at WOSU.org and make that pledge as well. Charlotte has joined us on the air today to talk about gardening and native plants for the Midwest. If shows about gardening are something you really enjoy from all sides, I know it's something I enjoy bringing to you, then we need to hear from you. From this book, we will learn how to showcase native plants in your garden, and the book includes beautiful full-color pictures of the plants so that you can see exactly what everything looks like. And you will be supporting 89.7 NPR News with your pledge today. Pledge $120 and get your own copy of The Midwestern Native Garden. Just pick up the phone and call 1-866-897-9678 and talk to our volunteers, or visit WOSU.org. Charlotte, you used to be an enthusiastic gardener of non-native plants yourself.
Absolutely.
How did you turn it around? What occurred to you? What made you stop and start turning things around?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, I was a lawyer, and I mean, I still am a lawyer, but I retired.
Once a lawyer, always a lawyer.
Always a lawyer. Yeah. I retired from the practice of law, and I was then able to spend more time gardening. And as I gardened, I began to, really intensively, I began to notice that although my daylilies from China and my hosta from China and tulips from the Mediterranean region of Europe and so forth were beautiful flowers, including the daylilies. I don't know if I mentioned that, mm-hmm. from China. Beautiful flowers, which is why we're all so attracted to them. I started noticing that that was it. I just had these flowers. I didn't have any butterflies. There weren't any bees. It was basically just a visual scene with nothing alive buzzing around it or visiting it. And then when I would wander into the other areas with my dog, I might notice that there were beautiful native flowers here and there, and that they attracted butterflies and bees and skippers, and it was an entirely different situation. It was alive. And so I thought, well, this is not what I want. I don't just want a visual experience in my garden. I also want to help this wildlife survive, which is obviously seeking native plants and flowers because they sure aren't coming to all these introductions. So then I started planting some native plants. And it was such a striking contrast that my husband and I simply took up all the grass in our backyard and turned it into a prairie. It isn't truly a prairie in the sense that it's miles and miles of open, sunlit grass and flower-studded ecosystems, but it has, because there are a lot of trees. So it's really more like a savanna. Of course, it's a created landscape, but there it is. And the contrast has been remarkable. I mean, now I have monarch butterflies regularly visiting my various species of milkweeds, laying eggs and producing monarch butterfly caterpillars, which eat their way through some of the leaves and become great big fat caterpillars. And it's just so much fun to watch them. And the little girls next door just love to see the caterpillars. They're always running over and asking me if they can see the caterpillars, even though they were really afraid of them when they first saw them. So, I mean, I feel so good about that. And the birds, that's an amazing thing to come. See how birds, the goldfinches, imagine walking out your front door like I am now lucky enough to do and seeing my anise hyssops. Surrounded by goldfinches who, fly away when I open the door. Mm-hmm. And so I have to hide behind a little post or something to let them eat in peace. And they bring their baby goldfinches, which are very noisy little birds. And the whole scene is just an amazing thing to be able to have in your own front yard. So to me, it's been a magical experience. And it's not a dead zone anymore. It's just full of life. Birds, butterflies, skippers, they just love to come, these tiny little butterflies with great big eyes. They love to come to my garden. And then skippers only lay their eggs on various native grass species, which hardly anybody knows about. So when we have all these Asian grasses, which are the fad these days, they're just totally depriving the native skippers of any reproductive areas, which is really sad. So I encourage people to, instead of choosing ornamental grasses from Asia, to choose ornamental grasses from our North American prairies, which are just beautiful.
Charlotte, are you satisfied that the nurseries, the garden centers are doing enough to push these kinds of things? Because that's not what you see when you walk in. Now, there is a little bit, sometimes you're starting to see tables of native.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that is one of the things I think we are living in a period of transition. I mean, maybe someday they'll look back at this period of time and say, well, back in, 2012, that was when we were transitioning from a totally non-native landscape culture into a native-dominated landscape culture. At least that's what I hope we're seeing. Because at one time, we never saw anything in a nursery. It was only a choice between one non-native plant and another non-native plant. Now, we are seeing offerings of native plants. And that's because of customer demand. And obviously, if we want to have native plants available to us, we have to ask for them. So when we go into these local nurseries or even large nurseries that sell plants online or, by mailing in your check for plants and stuff, we have to tell these sellers that we want native plants. We want regionally native plants, plants that always grew here. And that's what we want to pay for, and we're not going to buy them. We'll go somewhere else that sells them if they don't sell them. So I think that there has been a somehow the fact that it has become more understandable to people that native plants do have an impact on our environment, and people are starting to say that's what we want in our garden. We want flowers that will enable butterflies to lay their eggs and reproduce, and this is trickling down to the purveyors of plants. So it's sort of a, you know, cause and effect, and it's where the customer has to be the cause. We have to be the ones who say, this is what we want to buy. Please provide it to us.
Well, just in that way, if public media, if public radio is something you want to listen to, you have to show us
that
by showing your support. Right. You got
to
tell us. And the way to tell us, you can always call us and tell us. People do all the time. But if you want to show your support for it, make sure it's here the next time you turn on the radio. Give us a call, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. We have $1,400 to go still in just about 35 or 36 minutes. $1,400 to go. 14 people in the next 30 minutes is all we need to call. Be one of the 14, 1-866-897-9678. This is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us this morning is gardening expert Charlotte Edelman with our thank you gift for this hour, the Midwestern Native Garden. Charlotte says there are native plants that will attract the birds and butterflies you want to enjoy in your backyard. This book will teach you about the right native flowers and plants to choose. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org and support 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR News station, the only one in town that gives you what we give you. We need to hear from you now. 1-866-897-9678 or WOSU.org. If you want to send us an email with a question for Charlotte, you're welcome. The address is allsides@WOSU.org. An email from Sarah. What about roses? Are those native? I love my roses in my backyard. They are the same flowers my grandmother had in her garden, and I love carrying on the rose tradition. Can I just have roses and then have everything else be native?
Well, there are native roses, and of course there are many, many non-native roses from Europe, Africa, and Asia, and of course they're beautiful, and they serve, you know, a big function. Otherwise, people wouldn't be choosing them for their gardens. I'm not trying to tell people not to have their beloved flowers. What I'm trying to get across is that people can include additional plants, or in time, perhaps even substitute native plants and flowers for non-natives. So I wouldn't say to you, you know, get rid of your non-native roses, but I would suggest to you that you might decide to add some of the many beautiful native roses that are growing and that are extremely attractive to bees and butterflies because they evolved with them and they have the right shape and landing ability for these native insects to get to them for their nectar. So that's also their rose hips that they create are just the perfect size for the birds that are looking for winter food. So there's prairie wild rose, which is a very fragrant, beautiful rose. There's climbing rose or Illinois rose, which some people might choose instead of the traditional non-native climbing roses. There's early wild rose or smooth rose. There's marsh rose or swamp rose, which takes, you know, wet areas, which we were talking about as far as rain gardens and pasture rose, and there's white pasture rose. So I hope that what this book will inspire a person like you who has obviously a beautiful garden that is emotionally important to you is to add some of the beautiful native roses and see what benefits they provide.
The next time you go, in other words, the next time you decide you visit the nursery or the garden store, check out the native species and see what looks good.
And they may not have them in some of our Roses are one of the beautiful flowers that will may not be provided by some local nurseries, and one should then check out the web because there are wonderful nurseries that provide their plants by mailing them out in wonderful condition, and you can find them on the web. So look at for native nurseries. For example, you might check out the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center, and that excellent organization has a service where they have native plant purveyors by state. So you click on your state, and then you can find local native plant purveyors that you can go and buy beautiful native plants from. And you can also find some that aren't necessarily in your state, but will ship them out to you. And roses are certainly one of those plants because the native roses haven't gotten into mainstream yet. And so you have to get them from a native plant purveyor of some kind.
Thanks to Joseph in Upper Arlington, we have $1,300 to go, just $1,300 to meet our goal this hour, 1-866-897-9678. That's the number to call. It takes just 2 minutes, then you can get back to the show. You can also go online to WOSU.org and make your show of support that way through our secure server. We have another email from Bob. He writes, "You are right. I do love watching nature in action down on the bike trail. My backyard is boring. I hadn't thought about that. Thanks for thinking native."
Oh, that's a wonderful comment.
It is. I live down by the bike trail along the Olentangy River. I imagine that's what Bob's talking about. It's a really long trail, many, many miles long. And they've started to naturalize in my neck of the woods, which is called Worthington. They've started to naturalize more and more of the trail, bringing in more prairie grasses, but all native. And the birds flocking to those areas now this spring. The goldfinches, you're right, they're all over the place. And now I think I know why they're so noisy. It's because of the babies.
No, okay. Not with goldfinches. They're an unusual bird.
Okay.
They start laying their eggs in July. I guess they wait around and watch what all the other birds are doing, and then they decide to join, you know, in the process.
Okay.
But they are noisy. They're twittery birds, and they have a beautiful, very distinctive flight pattern, which is wonderful to observe, especially from your own backyard.
1-866-897-9678. Make that show of support right now for the kind of programming like this. I know folks out there love the gardening shows, so give us a call and tell us that by making a pledge right now. We have an email from Charlotte. English, Carpathian, walnut, or black walnut? Personally, I prefer black walnuts for their flavor, but are they truly native?
Well, black walnuts are native walnuts. If there's the name English, that is obviously a good clue that that particular species is not native. However, there's one thing that we have to do whenever we're, you know, selecting a plant. If we want to have a native plant, we have to check its scientific name, because common names are used for all kinds of plants all over the world, and tons of plants all have the exact same common name. So in order to check if a plant is native to North America, and even more specifically native to Ohio, let us say, one can look at USDA Plants website and type in the plant you're interested in, and there will be a depiction of that plant as to whether it's native. If it's native, it'll show up, and if it's introduced, it will show up with an I for introduced, only if it's become naturalized and invasive, because if there's just, say, one of a certain non-native plant in the whole United States, they're not going to put it on. But if it's already taken over and is showing up all over the place, it'll be on USDA Plants website. And then you can check and see, is this plant native or is this plant introduced? And then you can choose the native plant. Of course, if you're doing this for agriculture or food or anything, other considerations might take place. But if one wants, and it's interesting to know, by the way, that there are species of insects like butterflies that lay their eggs and reproduce on native oaks, native walnuts and native hickory trees, among many other kinds of trees. So that's an additional benefit. You can have your walnuts and also host butterflies at the same time.
Thanks to Justin in Sunbury, we have $1,200 to go in just about 30 minutes. Give us a call, 1-866-897-9678, and show your support right now. At the $120 pledge level, our guest to you is The Midwestern Native Garden by Charlotte Edelman, my guest today, also co-written with your spouse, right, Bernard Schwartz?
That's right.
The book includes a brief introduction and an explanation of how to use the book to create your own garden. There's a chapter for each season, spring, summer, fall, and winter, and then there is a helpful index and a great glossary full of terms for every gardener or gardening novice that every gardener or gardening novice needs to know. The book will teach you that native plants improve air and water quality and reduce the use of pesticides. We're going to ask Charlotte about that a little later. It's full of beautiful illustrative pictures of the plants. Another example from the book is that the forget-me-not is non-native, but narrow-leaf blue-eyed grass is a beautiful alternative. That's on page 44 of the book. A great reference book, by the way. You separate it, Charlotte, into seasons, and then you also look up, you can look up in the glossary, or the index, I should say, for the kind of plant you think you have in your yard, and you can look it up and find out if it's non-native or native and whether or not there's some way to replace it with something similar.
That's right. And I, as I said earlier, I think one of the reasons that we did it this way is that so many of us just don't know whether a plant is native or not native, and we just make assumptions, like daylilies. I mean, people just plant them without ever remotely thinking that actually they're introduced from China. I mean, and one of the reasons is they're, quote, naturalized. I mean, you go all over the place, and there are these orange daylilies just growing there as if that was their home for the last, you know, thousands of years, but they aren't native, and no one thinks of it. So sometimes it's a real shock to people when they realize that the very lovely flower they've just assumed was always here actually was introduced from some faraway country. And like for orange daylilies, I recommend orange butterfly milkweed, which is also a gorgeous orange and also is part of the family that is the sole host plant family for the monarch butterfly. The monarch butterfly only lays her eggs on the various species of milkweeds, and she cannot lay her eggs on a daylily. So if we want to have monarch butterflies, which are increasingly stressed because milkweeds are being, you know, removed from various areas as they're developed, we have to plant them in our own yards. And we have to ask landscapers to plant them when they design gardens. And the milkweeds are just beautiful, and they're not necessarily rambunctious. Many milkweeds are, as I like to say, well-behaved milkweeds, like the orange butterfly milkweed. It doesn't just spread all over the place. It just slowly gets bigger and bigger and more gorgeous and dramatic.
And I've seen that out in meadows down in southern Ohio, and they really attract the butterflies.
They do, because butterflies, if you take the whole family of milkweeds, according to a butterfly expert, Professor Thomas Barnes of the University of Kentucky, he calls them second only to dogbane, the best butterfly attracting plants. They attract at least 42 species of butterflies just for their nectar. That's not to mention the fact that they are the sole host plant for the monarch butterfly, which means it's the only plant she can reproduce on. I mean, that's one of the things that I find just astounding. And in researching this book, I was really struck by how one of the reasons we don't see many butterflies anymore is because they have nowhere to lay their eggs. I mean, it's sort of like a no-brainer. It's so obvious. And yet,
why can't we just tell them to lay their eggs on the hostas?
Why won't they just
do it?
If only they could they'd love to, I'm sure, but it would. They just don't have their little caterpillars, don't have the enzymes to digest the hosta foliage. So it takes a few thousand years for them to attain that ability, and by that time, maybe they won't be around.
Now, a couple years ago, I planted the Sullivan's milkweed.
Yes.
Which I love. And I put it in a damp part of my garden where there's a lot of drainage because I noticed it around a riverbank one time.
Mm-hmm.
And but something came along and ate the tops off of them last year. And now I'm worried that they're not going to come back for the first time because it's a seed.
Well, I would make a bet that they will come back. First of all, milkweeds do have really very sturdy root systems, and they all grow in, you know, kind of, well, seeds are obviously important, but they grow by runners and such, so that they generally will come back if they have the appropriate situation, which they apparently do in your yard, and who knows what chopped off their tops. It's very strange, but I guess anything can happen.
I every once in a while they'll come through, something will come through and just, you know, viciously bite off the tops of everything. So.
Right, but I'll bet that you'll see them. And of course, one thing about milkweeds, and by the way, thank you for planting Sullivan's milkweeds or prairie milkweeds.
Well, they're pretty. They're a pretty purplish, reddish thing.
Yeah, and they have a wonderful, delicate fragrance.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're one of the milkweeds that the monarch butterfly must have for her to lay her eggs.
And they'll grow in the shade, too.
Oh, they do? Really? Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I'll have to look into that a little more.
Yeah.
But milkweeds, and maybe this is what's going on with yours, they all come up late.
Yeah.
They poke their heads up late. And so if for people who, you know, don't have a perfect memory of exactly where everything is planted in their garden, they should mark them and have a little something there so that they, because, you know, in my yard, some of my milkweeds still haven't even shown their heads. So I know that if I'm just impatient, in a week or two, they'll finally peep up. But if I were to, let's say, be very impatient and dig out that area and plant something else, well, I'd be digging up my milkweed. So that's just one of the strange characteristic of milkweeds. They're a little late, so we have to mark them or know where they are, and then they will show up. And I'll bet yours will.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our spring membership drive, a perfect time to talk about gardening. And our goal today is simple, to get your pledge of support at 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org. And in return for your pledge, we're offering you the Midwestern Native Garden at the $120 level. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. The Midwestern Native Garden has beautiful, illustrative pictures of the plants and flowers you will have in your garden. The book explains that native plants improve air and water quality, reduce the use of pesticides, and provide vital food to birds and butterflies that non-native plants cannot offer. If you love to garden or know someone who loves to garden, this book is a great addition to your collection. And you'll be supporting 89.7 NPR News. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Make the call right now. And thanks to Carol and Bexley, we need just 11 more pledges in about 21 minutes. 11 pledges in 21 minutes should be no problem. There are 11 people out there right now listening who haven't shown their support for WOSU yet this year. Maybe it'll be your first time. This is a perfect opportunity to get involved. 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Dave and Loretta in Upper Arlington. Now we just have 10 more pledges this hour to meet our goal. 10 more people to pick up the phone, make the call. It takes just 2 minutes. Unlike the effort you might put into your garden, this is a very, very minimal effort. Just a couple minutes and whatever you can afford. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and make the pledge right now. We appreciate it. We have an email from John Charlotte. He writes, I have 3 beehives in my backyard. They love the Japanese honeysuckle. They also provide berries for the cardinals and Carolina wrens most of the winter. I pulled out half of the honeysuckle and put in spiceberry bushes. Those provide much less fruit and they're gone before December. I'm letting the honeysuckle take over again because it's more productive. I've heard the spiceberry berries are more nutritious than maybe they are, but some nutrition is better than no nutrition. Plus, I've never seen any peer-reviewed research on that. He says, I plant Mexican sunflowers every year because the bumblebees, goldfinches, and monarch butterflies love them.
Well, first of all, Japanese honeysuckle happens to be a notorious non-native invasive plant. I live in Illinois, as you mentioned, and it is one of the very few plants that that the Illinois legislature has actually outlawed. It takes a lot to get a plant outlawed by a state legislature.
There's so many other crimes that are being committed every day,
and
right?
So you know when they do that, that they, and the other two are a purple loosestrife and multiflora rose. And then more recently, Illinois outlawed the buckthorns, which are this pernicious non-native small tree that is taking over Illinois anyway. And so, yes, just look online, look under invasive plants and Japanese honeysuckle, and it's one of the most wanted of the non-native invasive plants, partly because of its berries that are eaten by the birds. And fortunately, there are native honeysuckles. So, I mean, it isn't necessary to buy or choose a non-native honeysuckle. They're just as wonderful as the Japanese honeysuckle, and they're not invasive. And here I am. I just found my little section here on mm-hmm. honeysuckle. And I have to admit to you that part of the reason that I find this book helpful is it's helpful to me because I can't always remember everything. And so I can just look in my own little book here, and there it is, because otherwise my mind might go blank. So here's non-native honeysuckle. And the non-natives are from Europe, China, and Japan, and they include European honeysuckle, Italian woodbine or sweet honeysuckle, and Japanese honeysuckle or Hall's honeysuckle. And it is naturalized and invasive in the Midwest, as I mentioned. What are some of the native alternatives? There's trumpet honeysuckle, also called coral honeysuckle. It's a Missouri Botanical Garden plant of merit. There's yellow vine honeysuckle, which has pale yellow flowers. There's dwarf honeysuckle or northern bush honeysuckle. And these are just some of the native honeysuckles. So I'd recommend at least installing some of these native honeysuckles. And frankly, because it's a non-native, I don't know what the Ohio law is, but I would not be too surprised but that Japanese honeysuckle is outlawed in Ohio. Now, as to the other plant, well, you know, you can't. It depends what your goals are. If you're looking for nectar for bees, mm-hmm. One should then investigate and find what are the most wonderful nectar plants for bees. I'm not an expert on bees, but I'm sure that there's a lot of information on the web and in other sources that will tell you what, you know, really are good for bees. A lot of them, of course, love pollen, but that's to feed their young.
Mm-hmm. There's alternatives then.
There are alternatives. And, of course, there are native plants. I mean, look, the bees thrived in North America before they imported honeysuckle from Japan. So, I mean, somehow there are plenty of native plants here that will really support bees. And I was at a little event where there was a man who makes mead. He, which is a drink made with honey. And he was quite enthusiastic about native plants because he feels that for the bees he raises, he finds that the native plants are much more abundant producers of nectar than the non-native plants. So that was just somebody who I happened to see making a presentation about what he felt were the best ways to provide bees with the nectar and that they need in order for him to prepare his mead and his honey, which he also sells. So it's just something to consider because I think that looking into this might prove quite rewarding.
Thanks to Michael in Columbus. We need 9 more calls or web pledges, and we'll meet our goal of $1,500 this hour. 9 more calls or web pledges. You'd be one of the 9 people that push us over the top. Help us meet our goal, 1-866-897-9678. Is the number to call, or you can go online to WOSU.org and make your web pledge right now. If you would like to speak with Charlotte Edelman, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Charlotte can consider your question or comment. From Dave in Granville, he asks, does your guest's book include anything for those of us living in condos and only have container gardens? Good question, Dave.
Well, the book is organized, and thank you for that question, because that's one of the things that I'm hoping this book will inspire, is thinking, you know, beyond our gardens and into container gardens and other forms of gardens. The book is organized with non-native plants and their native, you know, suggested native alternatives. So it depends what you have in your boxes at the moment, and it's very likely that you'll be able to find native alternatives for those selections that you made. You may have annuals, you may have perennials, you know, I really don't know exactly what you have, but yes, there's no doubt that one can have beautiful container gardens consisting of native plants.
1-866-897-9678. Don't forget, that's the number to call to make your pledge right now. And we're taking in some calls now from folks that want to talk to Charlotte. That number is 614-292-8513. Thanks to Sandy in Centerburg and also Blanche in Columbus. We need 7 more calls to go this hour. We have about 13 minutes and 7 more calls to go. I know we can do it. 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org and make the pledge right now. And thank you so much, Sandy and Blanche. Email from Kathy. She asks, can your guest give the name of the native plant website and what other plants draw butterflies in this area? Thanks.
A native plant website?
Yes.
Well, there are legions of them. I'm not sure whether our telephone person here wants nurseries or just information about native plants. I would one wonderful source, of course, is always the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center, because they seem to have almost everything.
Okay.
They have tons of information
and
about...
And across the country, too. It's not just for Texas.
Right.
Right.
Yes, exactly. They, of course, in their own gardens, they plant Texas plants because they're in Texas, and they choose native plants that are plants that are native to Texas. But the information they have on their website is nationwide, and you can find out an awful lot about plants. They give all kinds of information about native plants. And virtually all native plants attract butterflies. Wasn't that the question?
It was to give the name of the native plant website and what other plants draw butterflies in this area.
Yeah, well, as I say, try that. Another website I happen to love, and there are so many websites, so mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's just type in native plants.
In Ohio,
exactly, you know, depending on how specific, and well, I know Ohio does have websites.
I can't imagine that the OSU Extension doesn't have something, and also the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District probably has something. They have a native plant sale every year, so that's another option,
yeah.
Kathy.
I'm sure that those, you know, that Ohio has all kinds of websites that would help. And, of course, I live in Illinois, and one of my own personal favorites is one called Illinois Wildflowers, which is a wonderful, and of course, we're all in the Midwest, and to check it to see if a specific plant is actually, let's say, in Ohio, because mm-hmm. most of them are throughout the Midwest. It's the way this book was organized, because it does cover an area, a region that has mostly the same plants, but sometimes they are unique to certain areas. And you can always check that by going on USDA plants and seeing if this particular plant actually is native to Ohio. And even in certain instances to counties, it gets quite detailed. Mm-hmm. And of course, some plants are extinct in certain counties or are endangered in certain states or counties, which is a good reason to start planting them to prevent that from happening. But I just wanted to make this point. Not every plant attracts, well, they all attract butterflies, but sometimes when the butterfly gets there, the butterfly is disappointed. And one of the plants that causes this sad situation for a butterfly is Queen of the Prairie, which is just a gorgeous plant with huge plumes of hot pink flowers, but they only have pollen. So bees love it, and lots of little tiny beneficial flies, and the flies attract hummingbirds, which a lot of people don't realize. Hummingbirds eat insects as well as sip nectar.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a plant that is really a bee plant and not a butterfly plant, but it's so beautiful that anyone would want it in their garden. And unfortunately, it is endangered in parts of the Midwest.
What did we do? Thanks
yes.
to Mike in Columbus and also Jane in Stoutsville. Five more calls to go. We've got a little, almost 10 minutes to go, and we just need five more calls to make our goal this hour. Thanks to everybody for your support of 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher. The number to call is 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge right now. Thank you, Dale in Worthington. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dale.
Well, yeah, I have a question. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about, I'm impressed about the information I got about what to plant to collect bees and, butterflies, because I know from the PBS shows that I've seen that there's a problem with those in terms of, you know, lose them, and I'm into it. But I'm curious about a variegated tall grass. Would that be indigenous to Ohio? Would that be a native species? Because I know it grows really thick and really tall, and the base just keeps going out now.
Mm-hmm.
I know it doesn't have anything to do with butterflies and or bees, but I'm curious about that because, this stuff has gone crazy, and I just wonder if it's regional.
Variegated. Thank you, Dale, for that question. Variegated tall grass.
Well, that, of course, is a description of appearance of a grass. I don't know if it's a native or not native, because I'd have to have a name of the grass, like is it a switchgrass or is it a Japanese, whatever grass. So from that, just that descriptive name, which is a common name, obviously, which, mm-hmm. as I say, applies to so many things, I don't know. I would suspect that it's not native, because I'm not familiar with any native grasses that actually are variegated. But I would also, I would urge people who find grasses ornamental and beautiful, which they are, and of course they stand up during the winter too, and you get to watch them waving in the icy cold breezes from as you huddle in front of the fireplace in your house. But the gentleman who just called, I'd like to point out that these grasses, the native grasses, are very significant in the lives of butterflies, because there are so many butterflies, and especially skippers, which are these small butterflies with big eyes, they lay their eggs only on native grasses. And so that's just something most of us, I never knew about that until I started researching this book. It never occurred to me. But yes, grasses are vital to the very life of these skippers, because they must have native grasses in order to reproduce. So when we keep installing these ornamental non-native grasses everywhere we go, we are depriving the skippers of locations for them to lay their eggs and reproduce. So I'd urge people who love ornamental grasses to start only choosing native grasses, which come in all sizes, from very delicate and small to large and imposing. And some like shade, some like fall. There are woodland grasses, which take a lot of shade, which are just stunning. So there's a whole world of native grasses out there, which I think is hope people will start looking into, instead of going with Chinese silver grass and feather reed grass.
You devote several pages in the book
yes.
to grasses. And
right.
also just want to remind folks that this book is organized very visually. In other words, you look up, you don't always have to know the name of the plant, you could just start going through and looking at the pictures, and you could start to see. I know I have started to see stuff that is in my garden that I thought was native that's not. 1-866-897-9678. That's the number to call to make your pledge right now. Our gift to you at the $120 pledge level is a copy of The Midwestern Native Garden, an illustrated guide by Charlotte Edelman, my guest, and also her husband, Bernard Schwartz. Give us a call right now. You can also go online to WOSU.org and make your pledge right now. Thanks to Kathy and Powell. We have four more calls to go in just 5 minutes. Four calls in 5 minutes. I know we can do it. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge right now. Don't wait. We need your help now. We need you to show your support right now. Thanks so much. Natalia in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Natalia.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm into gardening as well, but I'm more interested in things that are edible, and I was wondering if the book actually went into edible native plants.
Well, I wish we could have gone into that. There's so many aspects about native plants that are, you know, unbearably fascinating, but I would say prairie drop seed, for example. The Native Americans ground the seeds into a flour and used it as a form of bread. And I do have that as a little note in the book. But the focus of the book is more for butterflies and preserving native plants from going extinct and providing pollinators with the nectar and pollen that they need. There are some wonderful books, by the way, on native plants as sources of food.
You know, another aspect of the book that we haven't gotten into is how you also illustrate the different butterflies and caterpillars that are, by the way, Natalia, thanks for that call, that are attracted to the different plants. You show pictures of them in the book as well.
Yes, and one thing, of course, I want to sort of emphasize this is not just attracting these butterflies, but it's providing them with a place to reproduce, which is something that a lot of lovers of butterflies think in terms of nectar that will attract the butterflies to come and have a little sip of nectar. But if that butterfly can't find a plant upon which to reproduce, it won't be there in the next few years looking for nectar because they have to have reproduction in order to have subsequent generations. And I also would like to mention we do have a bibliography in the book which does mention a lot of wonderful books, including some references to books that deal with what that last caller talked about. I'm trying to see if I can. Well, anyway, there are wonderful books that talk about using native plants as food sources and for medical sources, too.
And also selected resources on native and non-native plant identification, butterflies, moths, and insects, invasive plants, birding and ornithology, butterflies and insects, different organizations, different governmental organizations that follow these different plants and different animal species and can tell you more about them if you're interested in them. Thanks to Nancy and James in Dublin. Two more pledges to go. We have just 2 minutes to go and two more pledges to go. Be one of the two callers that helps push us over the top on our goal this hour. 1-866-897-9678 is the number to call. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Our thank you gift to you this hour at the $120 level is the Midwestern Native Garden. We've been spending the last hour with Charlotte Edelman. She is one of the co-authors of the book. This is the only time Charlotte Edelman is going to be joining us during the drive. So this is the time to get this great book as your thank you gift right now. 1-866-897-9678. Just two more calls to meet the goal. We're coming up on just 1 minute left in the hour. Pick up 1-866-897-9678 on a pledge of $240. Get one of those books for yourself and give one as a gift and double your commitment. It would make a great Mother's Day gift. 1-866-897-9678. There's a mother out there that you know who loves to garden. Charlotte Edelman, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It was really wonderful.
Charlotte Edelman, native plant expert and co-author of The Midwestern Native Garden, an illustrated guide. Thanks for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Thanks for your help.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, helping to transform the lives of women and girls in Central Ohio. Presenting Whoopi Goldberg for the 2012 Keyholder event on June 29th at Nationwide Arena. Tickets at Ticketmaster.